More than half of Indiana's budget goes to support K through 12 education, so it probably shouldn't come as any surprise that schools are front and center in every session of the General Assembly. Even if money weren't an issue, education would spark passionate debate, thanks to proposals on topics such as school prayer, universal curriculum standards, and private school vouchers. Hi, I'm John Schwanis, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, we'll sit down with a panel of high-profile school reform advocates, including the state's newly elected superintendent of public instruction. First, though, a State House update from Brittany Muncy of thestatehousefile.com, a service of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism.
Funding for K through 12 education and state universities make up 65% of the state's $29 billion two-year budget. But a sour economy means the state has had to cut some dollars to education in recent years. Now, the state has a $2 billion surplus, and the question for new Governor Mike Pence and Republican legislative leaders is how to spend it. Pence says he wants to increase funding for education by just 1%, and schools would have to earn some of the money. He also wants $6 million for teacher excellence grants.
Well, as we've talked with folks around the state as to how we can move forward on both our education opportunities for Hoosier children and career and workforce development, it's clear that as one of the six lowest states in the nation on sending 3- and 4-year-olds to preschool, that this was the next step.
And in both the House and Senate, lawmakers are debating bills to expand the state's voucher program, which sends state money to private schools. But Senate Appropriations Chairman Luke Kinley says that might not be a good decision for the budget.
We're willing to invest tax dollars in children who need an alternative to something that didn't work for them. And I think that's kind of the premise on which we need to expand any voucher program, is to restrict it to that situation where we know that they've been to a public school and they're just not succeeding there.
For Indiana Lawmakers and thestatehousefile.com, I'm Brittany Muncy.
Back in a moment with what promises to be a lively roundtable discussion on education reform. From the State House to your house.
Purdue Research Park. 4 locations, 200 companies, 4,000 jobs. Purdue Research Park. The idea economy is here.
Although I haven't set foot in a classroom as a student for more than 2 decades, I can't go 2 or 3 nights without dreaming about school. I invariably find myself sitting down to take an exam for which I haven't studied. Sometimes I can't even find the classroom. That never-ending exam reminds me of the clamor for school reform. Both keep coming back again and again. Every Indiana governor since Bob Orr in the 1980s has made education reform his calling card. Is that the way it should be? In other words, are schools like the children they serve continually growing and changing? Or do reformers run the risk of, well, reform fatigue? Joining me to talk about Indiana schools, where they are and where they should be, are longtime educator Glenda Ritz, who just last week became Indiana's first Democratic superintendent of public instruction in 40 years. Senator Dennis Cruz of Auburn, the Republican chairman of the Senate Education and Career Development Committee. Republican Senator Scott Schneider of Indianapolis, a member of that committee and the leader of a push to abandon the so-called Common Core state standards. And Nikki Woodson, superintendent of the Washington Township Metropolitan School District, a racially and economically diverse school district serving more than 10,000 students on the north side of Indianapolis. And I thank you all for being here.
My pleasure.
I will admit I was kind of holding out for a 2-hour weather delay, but neither of the superintendents here could come through for me.
Not
so
today.
Thanks a lot. Well, let's start with you as state superintendent of public instruction. Certainly congratulations.
Thank you.
When it comes to education reform, Hoosiers, a lot of them anyway, the 52% perhaps who voted for you said, you know, too much, too fast. Do you buy that theory?
Well, actually, it was a nonpartisan election. You know, I think it was a mandate on a direction in education, not necessarily the laws that are in place, as the implementation of the laws that were put in place. So I think that Hoosiers across the state were wanting to have more time in the classroom and less time on testing. And I think it really was a referendum, so to speak, on a direction with education, not necessarily about reforms.
Now, you have a lot of things, obviously, you want to do. You talked about them during the campaign. Some of them, are, of course, are things you want to do. Some are things you want to put the brakes on or abandon altogether. And so, I wonder as we as we go through that, do you wonder, in all due respect, what can you actually accomplish? Because you look at the, I know you said nonpartisan, but you look at the political realities here. You have a Republican in the governor's office. You have Republican supermajorities in both the House and the Senate. State Board of Education, which you chair, of course, 10 other members were appointed by Mitch Daniels, and when their terms are up, the reappointments or new members would come from Mike Pence. How do you navigate that?
Well, actually, I think I navigate it like I always have, worked with education policy. Never been able to choose the parents I work with or the school board members or the superintendents or my administration. I've never asked people's political parties when I talk about education. When I talk with lawmakers about education, that's what we talk about. We talk about education. I don't see education as being a political football. Don't want it to be a political football. I want it to be about what's right for kids. And actually, when I have conversation with lawmakers, that's what we talk about. So I'm feeling very good about working on positive directions for education in Indiana.
And by the way, we should point out the person you defeated is now the superintendent in Florida. And after this week of single-digit temperatures, I'm going to ask you who really won that election. We'll save that for later in the show. Dennis Cruz, these obviously are issues of great importance to you as chairman of the Senate Education Committee. You've been a backer of reform over the years in various manifestations. But I look at a survey, for instance, that Ball State University did in conjunction with Wish TV here in Indianapolis before the session. And one of the questions they asked was satisfaction with your public schools. And 7 out of 10 Hoosiers said they were satisfied. Now, 70% approval rating, any politician would die for that. Why, given that general or seeming satisfaction, is there still this clamor for reform and for tweaking?
Well, I think tweaking is better than clamoring now. I think we've put through some pretty significant reforms, and I think we need to let them take place and see how they work out over the next couple of years. I think people in general are kind of tired of these major changes in education, and I think this year I don't think we should make major changes in education. I think we just need to implement what we've done, and with the new superintendent on board now, I think she'll have a little different tenor and approach to things, and let her allow, you know, her to be able to function in her new job. So I don't think it's wise for us to have any more major education reforms this year.
I think your 149 colleagues may have missed the memo that you sent on that about dampening the enthusiasm for reform, but clearly a lot of measures have been filed, as they always are. You mentioned the new superintendent's approach and demeanor. You suggested in a recent interview that because she had not been a superintendent in the past, didn't have the maybe administrative experience, that this was going to be sort of a less aggressive year perhaps than what we would see in the future in terms of reform from her office. Mm-hmm. Is that a belief or a hope on your part that we won't see much aggressive sorts of...
Well, I think it's wise for the new superintendent to learn what's going on, to learn the issues, to learn the people and the players at the State House, and for her to come in real aggressive at the beginning, I think may not have been in her best interest. I think she's handling things very well so far. I'm beginning to work with her and her staff and learning them, and I think she's taken the right approach so far.
Nikki Woodson, let me ask you, you're in the trenches, and I'm eager to get your perspective for a lot of reasons. I think, actually, you overlapped. You were actually the superintendent's boss
Absolutely.
At one point in
and
Washington Township
mine.
School.
So
I wasn't going to ask whose boss is whose. But and also, you're represented, your district, largely by Senator
yes.
Schneider. So,
yes.
And you're in an urban district that is certainly in the news for a lot of good reasons, mostly,
Absolutely.
Sometimes some not-so-good reasons. But your take on reform, is there among your counterparts in central Indiana and across the state, is there an appetite for reform, or is it, as Senator Cruz has suggested, a desire to let's take a deep breath, see where we stand right now?
In Washington Township, we serve a very diverse group of students, as you said in my intro. We want to do what's best for those students in the classroom every day. And so we believe in some of the pieces that are in place that support the teaching and learning process for a diverse group of students. We certainly are concerned about funding that has been lost for the past few years, restoring that. We're certainly concerned when I can't plan for the future of kindergarten students, for instance, for unknown funding for next school year for that. It handicaps leaders in certain ways. We certainly are concerned with the amount of assessments. As Superintendent Ritz has already mentioned, educators have spoken broadly and widely about that. We hold ourselves accountable within Washington Township and with external validation on what we are doing with our teaching and learning process. So we are not afraid of accountability. We're not afraid of choice. We offer choice district-wide for all of our parents. We embrace competition in Washington Township. So all of those misnomers about what public educators are afraid of, in Washington Township, we are not. We compete with the best of them. We are very proud of our innovation. We are one of few districts nationwide implementing international baccalaureate for every student in every school in our entire district. So we feel like we can compete very well. The reform efforts that have been put in place, again, we embrace. We do what we are told within Washington Township, certainly from the federal government or state government or Department of Education, and we implement that to the best of our ability with the students in mind. And when you say I'm in the trenches every day, that's the most important part, those students in mind.
Well, you just gave me a good jumping off point because I want to pull Senator Schneider into this. You talked about implementing policies that are set at the state level, at the national level, et cetera, et cetera. That brings me to a reform initiative that has gotten a lot of attention, certainly, this session, and promises to get more, I presume, before all is said and done. Scott Schneider, you suggested that Indiana needs to back away from the Common Core state standards. And again, these are basically standards for language arts and math and so forth in all grades that governors largely came together, 45, 46 of them, depending on how you count it, and said these are standards we want to embrace. It hasn't even been fully implemented. I think it's only in kindergarten and first grade in Indiana at this point. I think it's 2014 and 15 when the school year it'll actually be rolled out in 12th grade or all the way through. Why do you want to abandon it now?
Well, keep in mind that this was a subject of a five-hour committee hearing, so we'll try to. We'll do our best. The issue to me. I was approached by two families in my district who were having some issues with their kids in a school that had already implemented some phases of Common Core. Their kids were doing well in math the year prior and were struggling the current year under Common Core. And to be quite honest with you, I wasn't all that well versed in it. And I think if you ask a lot of legislators and even people in the state house, they had the same feeling. They really weren't well-versed and understood what exactly it was. So that exposed a whole suitcase of stuff that needed unpacked in terms of what it is, how it came about in Indiana. And I think we all agree that the goals are laudable. You know, we all want our kids to have a little bit more rigorous standards. We want international benchmarking, and we want college and career readiness. I think the key is, is Common Core the road to get us there? And my big concern is when you have, well, first of all, is the process that we developed in Indiana prior to Common Core was collaborative, it was open, it was transparent, and it was deliberate. It was over the many months, it was a course of months as opposed to weeks, and Common Core was brought in the course of weeks. With very little, if any, local input.
Well, in terms of the review at the state level now,
correct.
Supporters would say it has been unfolding for years I won't say at the federal level because
sure.
It's not a federal program, but within the National Governors Association and others,
yeah.
It's not as if it, I guess it was more than weeks in the making at that point. But you're suggesting that once Hoosiers got a hold of it,
correct.
it was a much
yeah,
shorter
Indiana,
period of time.
Yeah, I don't think there was a single teacher or parent or anybody from Indiana that had an opportunity to review those standards. The standards aren't tried and true. They're theoried only.
And of course, now your position is puts you at odds with, for instance, Mitch Daniels and Glenda Ritz's predecessor, Tony Bennett, and in a strange juxtaposition, I guess, sort of makes you two allies because, Glenda Ritz, you say you don't necessarily oppose the core standards, but do you agree? I sense you do, based on what you've said in interviews and so forth, that it's time to put the brakes on a little bit and reassess.
Well, yeah, I'm not wanting to void Common Core, right now. I actually want to review. I think the dialogue did not happen a few years back. We've started to do some implementation. I have heard concerns from several constituents, whether it be parents or educators, regarding specifically in math. I think in math, we have to have some courageous dialogue mm-hmm. about how we're implementing math and how students are going to be able to leave our K-12 system and not have to have remediation when they go on to higher education. So we have to have some good dialogue regarding that. I'd like to use the year 2013 to actually pause and actually get input and assess. And if we want to come back with some more recommendations regarding standards, then we would do that.
And Senator Cruz, this bill, like so many others that we will be talking about, is in your committee. You yes. haven't voted, called it to a vote yet. But yesterday or earlier in the week, I saw you quoted as saying a compromise is in the works. So what is that going to look like? And I'll give you even less time than the 30 seconds I gave, because I do want to touch on some other things.
Well, I think the compromise will be something similar to what Glenda Ritz gave in her testimony. I think we just step back and reevaluate, maybe have hearings all over the state. Another area I talked to Senator Schneider about is we really haven't done a Hoosier evaluation of the cost of this. So I think it's proper in an amendment that we look at the cost for the next 5 years of how much Common Core will cost. Maybe it'll find out it'll be hundreds of millions, and we think, hold it a minute. We don't have $300 or $400 million to implement this, even if we like it. So I think it's maybe good for us. I think Senator Schneider's working on an amendment that'll have us look at the cost of it, and then also I think for the Indiana Education Roundtable and the Board of Education to also go back and maybe review it again and have pros and cons. The first time around it was in the Education Roundtable, which I'm a member of. Not one person said one bad thing about it, so there was no reason for any of us to vote no at that point. So we just kind of passed it on, and I think now with more information, it'd be good to reevaluate that.
And when everybody in the State House is trying to evaluate costs attached to initiatives and programs, we probably could say this is a great segue to talk about vouchers, which Indiana already has one of the most extensive voucher programs, courtesy of legislation enacted 2 years ago, pushed largely by your predecessor, Tony Bennett, and by Mitch Daniels. There's an appetite in the governor's office, certainly, and in the Republican caucus in the House of expanding that, taking away some of the means testing for certain student categories, eliminating the waiting period, if you will, where right now before you can get into get a voucher, one of these $4,500 vouchers, of course you need to sample public school for a year. Nikki Woodson, this, of everybody here, this seems to me that this would affect you most dramatically. I presume that Washington Township has lost a number of students already to the earlier voucher program. What concern or what hope does this latest suggestion give you?
Ironically, in Washington Township, after a 10-year flatline of enrollment, we have spiked in enrollment the past 4 years. Mm-hmm. I do believe it's because of the strong programming that we're offering through International Baccalaureate. We have a number of non-resident students from Carmel, Zionsville, Noblesville, Indianapolis, who want to attend our schools that we accept through the non-resident process. We have a list of students who have accepted vouchers who live within Washington Township. We embrace that opportunity. I'm a mother of two children myself, so I embrace choice for parents in Indiana. I feel like we're very competitive in Washington Township. The concerns I have with the current legislative session come when I read pieces about the preschool pilots and things that a voucher would diminish the one-year requirement to attend a public school if they accept a preschool voucher and pieces like that. The other concerns I have as a public educator are the inequities with voucher accepting schools. In Washington Township, which is the sole reason why I'm a public educator, accepts any student who lives in my boundaries at any school at any time. Some of our schools who accept vouchers can screen students in and out, can close the door on certain students and not. That, to me, is an inequity.
Well, you heard Nikki Woodson give her take on,
sure.
on vouchers, and also she alluded to the pre-K experiment that Republicans in the House are advocating, $7 million pilot program that would serve about 1,000 low-income students initially. Also, there's a proposal for a tax credit to encourage Hoosiers to contribute, if you will, to scholarships that would go to privately run schools for 3- and 4-year-olds.
There's
a lot to chew on there.
That's true.
I take it that's something that runs against your
core. Yeah,
there's
no secret that I'm for public dollars going to public schools. So I've been openly against the voucher program. I think that we should be waiting for the Supreme Court to actually make a ruling first regarding the vouchers. I also am concerned about the expansion of the vouchers. I think that we need to step back, like once again, and evaluate what's going on. I don't think we've taken a good stance on doing that. And also the regarding preschool vouchers, this is an unusual position for me to take as the state chief, but I actually want to put a hold on the talk about preschools, because we have several programs going on throughout the state of Indiana actually using federal dollars for daycare in conjunction with Title I monies. We have several programs going on. We don't have standards yet established. We did not appoint the commission that was supposed to be appointed 2 years ago on early childhood. We need to have a plan.
And
in
we've
place.
Not yet taken care of kindergarten.
That's
We're
right.
We're still skipping over
yeah.
kindergarten.
It is funded for those who haven't
followed. Yes.
It was funded with a one-time appropriation
one
out
time,
of some found dollars.
Year.
But it is in the governor's budget proposal
for
funding. We're almost out of time, and any language arts teacher would give me low marks for skipping from topic to topic. School prayer, the teaching of creationism, two things with which you're closely associated. Mm-hmm. Are you holding out hopes that those will see light of day this?
I don't.
I mean, you filed them, but will they actually go anywhere?
I don't think so. No, I think they're mute this session. So I would like to have seen a hearing on it, but that's not going to take place.
All right. And Senator Schneider, you get the final word. I'll just throw it out there because we've sort of talked around you. What do you want to see ultimately happen this session with reform?
Well, I think from the voucher standpoint, I think somebody that was a full supporter of the reforms under Governor Daniels and Tony Bennett, and touching back on the Common Core just for a moment, there's no...
You already used your 30 seconds
well,
on that, but and now we're out of time, so it's even worse.
We talked about this being part of their reform. Sure, it was certainly part of their reform, but I think it actually is a threat to choice. Where commonality of curriculum now amongst voucher schools, charter schools, and public schools, and I think it really diminishes choice. So I do depart from Governor Daniels and Bennett on that issue, but this is not part and parcel to a throwing out of all of the reforms that happened.
All right. Unfortunately, we could go on. As you pointed out, the committee hearing went on for 5 hours. We could probably go on that long and then some. We didn't even get to talk about mandatory cursive writing instruction. So so I'll have to keep scribbling my notes. In the meantime, we'll come back and talk about that again. I thank you all for being here for this important discussion
thank
of
you.
Education reform in Indiana. Again, my guests have been Democratic State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Glenda Ritz, Republican Senator Dennis Cruz of Auburn, Republican Senator Scott Schneider of Indianapolis, and Nikki Woodson, Superintendent of Washington Township Schools here in Indianapolis. What would a proposed constitutional ban on same-sex marriage mean for Indiana's economy? On the next Indiana Lawmakers. Time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight and its sister publication, Indiana Education Insight. Well, Ed, money is at the heart of every education discussion. I didn't dwell on that in the roundtable because things are likely to change in the governor's proposal. Where is it all going to end up? Schools come out flush this session or not?
Well, the governor says that he's giving an increase in his proposed budget to K-12 education and higher ed as well. There's some questions about to what extent that really is an increase, because he's talking about offering a percentage increase that would be a little bit less than the rate of inflation and certainly wouldn't get back to even where we were a few years ago before the big $300 million cuts. A lot of the metrics that the governor's using in talking about his increases are a lot like the percentage metrics that Governor Daniels used, and they really don't get at the bottom line dollars. I think you're going to see more money going to education, more money than the governor has proposed for education, but it also may be in the form of some preschool money, some career education money, in addition to the straight out K-12 kinds of funding formula funding.
And again, leaders of both chambers have said that the 1% each year is going to be bumped up. And these are members of the governor's own party. So that's going to happen. It is a given. One thing that has gotten attention about the funding proposal from the governor's office is that in the second year of the biennium, A big chunk of money would be divided up among top performing schools, those that have high graduation rates and where third graders can read at a prescribed level and they get A's or B's on the state report card. That's rewarding the haves. What does that do to the have-nots? Does that exacerbate the problem?
And that's something that a number of legislators have a concern over, and there's a concern that we're not following the child in the funding again, and there are a lot of legislators who believe that we've established a principle that we ought to stick with.
And in terms of other reforms, the tweaking, if we've used the term tweaking, of what we saw previously, state takeover of schools, there are a lot of things that people have talked about tweaking, underperforming schools, that is. Where does that end up?
Well, some things have kind of taken a lesser or a backseat to the higher profile kinds of things that we heard about on the roundtable today, the Common Core standards, for example, that nobody would have imagined would have been an issue back in, say, September of last year before the election. But there are some things that people do think need to be taken care of in terms of tweaking. For example, some of the issues related to school takeovers and how that funding works and what happens with charter schools that have charters revoked and what happens to the children after that, what goes through how that whole process kind of works through and what really needs to be done with the funding after that kind of a situation.
Sounds like the makings of another 5-hour committee hearing, so we'll have to get to that next time. Thanks, Ed. Appreciate your insight. For more information, episode streams, and extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity and Bright House Network. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Lawmakers under News. I'm John Schwamis. Thank you for joining us.
What happens when bright ideas meet world-class infrastructure?
You can discover new ways to treat cancer.
Understand our planet.
Understand our galaxy.
To learn more, visit PurdueResearchPark.com.